like that, old man? You want a piece of me?
Do I feel like it? Well, do you, Bunk?
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of red gum in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love beats never having to say you're sorry.
You do? You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
I answered. And don't call me sure.
There's no crying in baseball!
This is wrong, bitch.
Hey, the Schwartz baby!
I am the father.
Get you, my pretty.
Take your stinking paws off me.
May the force be with you.
Here's Johnny.
Vindicated!
I am selfish, I am wrong!
Happy Thursday, film fans, and welcome to another bonus edition of the Cinnamon Movie Podcast as we talk Spider-Man 2 on this road to Spider-Man No Way Home. Welcome to this bonus edition. I am your host, Juan, and I am joined by the cast. Zach?
Hey, guys. What's up?
Eduardo?
Finally happy to be here.
What a week it has been, and I can't wait to dig into Spider-Man 2. Some consider one of the greatest superhero movies of all time. We're going to dig into it. We're going to review it. For those of you that have not joined us on a bonus episode, very, very fun episodes. We get straight to the point. We dig into the movie. This is a completely ad-free, segment-free show, and we come to you every Thursday night. So, should be fun. For those of you that are tuning in for the very, very first time, you guys can find us wherever you listen to podcasts at Podbean, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Amazon Music, and now thanks to the Prescribed Films Network, the PFPN. So keep listening and check us out. Yeah, you find us on Apple Music, Spotify, everywhere that you listen to podcasts. And then the social media, the three main accounts that we keep up with. We have giveaways, we have girthy giveaways, digital copy giveaways. Check us out on the Twitter, at Cinnamon405. You can check out all of my recent watches on the Instagram page. One word, Cinnamon Movie Podcast. And then the Facebook is facebook.com/TheCinnamonMoviePodcast. So, let's dig into it, guys. Spider-Man 2 had a June 30th, 2004 release date. With a budget of $200 million, this movie almost grossed $800 million at the box office, with an IMDb of 7.3, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, a Metascore of 83%, and then the Google users currently have it at 86%. Peter Parker is beset with troubles in his falling personal life and his battles with a brilliant scientist named Dr. Otto Octavius. Zach, do you remember the first time that you've seen Spider-Man 2? Did you get to check it out in theaters?
I did. I got to see it. I think the day it came out, my mom took me and two of my other friends to go see it. And, man, I remember still just being blown away by the movie. And it, like, I thoroughly remember I just remember... it outdoing the first movie by like a whole mile.
How was it revisiting it for this episode?
Rewatch. I hadn't seen it probably in a couple, truthfully, probably 10 plus years to be honest. And on this rewatch, I still had the same feelings, and it just feels like this film is just on a much more grander scale than the first film, even though it's still set in New York.
Eduardo, how do you feel about this movie? Do you remember the first time you've seen it? If not, how was it revisiting it for the episode?
I don't remember the exact first time. I know it was within a few months of it being released, for sure. As well as I loved it, I thought it was great. I actually had several things of memorabilia back when I was a kid for it. Still to this day, I really like this one. It's a fun movie to watch, so I think it'll be pretty fun to talk about.
Starring Tobey Maguire, Kristen Dunst, Alfred Molina, James Franco, Rosemary Harris, J.K. Simmons, Daniel Giles, directed still by the great Sam Raimi. You also get, I don't know if he's fully in the cast, but you still get some cameos from Willem Dafoe, Cliff Robertson, Bruce Campbell. And But let's dig into it, man. This is considered one of the greatest Spider-Man movies of all time. Some people even consider it one of the greatest superhero movies of all time. Let's start off with a very, very fun opening. You get, you know, the comic book montage of the first film with the great Danny Elfman score. And then you get the pizza opening.
Yeah.
This is the first time that you kind of see Peter use his powers to help him try to get by in life.
Yeah.
It's pizza time.
It is pizza time.
That guy stole his pizza.
Spider-Man stole the guy's pizza. You get some of the funny traits of, using the spider web to get the piece of pizza back to put it in.
Yeah. But that piece of shit didn't even get the pizza back. Like,
whoa, somebody needs to tell Edward on the bonus episodes. We watch our language here on Thursdays. But I do say that I think this is probably the funnest opening. Even Spider-Man 3 or any of the other Spider-Mans. I like to see Tobey Maguire and Peter using their powers to
get by in life. Well, I like it just because it's, you know, his life has literally fallen apart. He's like, he's suffering in school, he can't keep a job, he still hasn't confessed his love to Mary Jane, and the role of being Spider-Man is weighing on him, like, literally.
Well, I mean, you know, you've got different things that kind of, and I like this one.
Almost like job by day, podcaster at night.
Oh.
I like this iteration of Spider-Man the most just because of the organic powers. And literally his emotions affect that. And that's one huge thing. Even in some of the a couple of comics, you know, with the organic, at least, powers. Because this one takes a lot from Spider-Man No More. Even, you know, one of the iconic walkaway scenes where he leaves the suit in the trash can, that's literally taken from...
That's the front of the comic. You know,
yeah. There's several different things like that that are taken, like when she calls him Tiger, that's, you know, taken from the comics.
You know, a
lot of different things.
You know what troubled me about this one? And again, I watched these movies to dissect it for this podcast. So watching the second one again, I was... troubled by, you know, Peter's having issues with life. He's down on life. He's down on himself. He's losing his powers. Spider-Man 2 has the perfect formula for Venom. Am I not right?
Like how Venom could be intertwined in it?
Yes, Venom should be intertwined with the way he's feeling. And I know we'll get to 3, but he's just so depressed. He's so down on himself. Nothing is going right in life.
Not really, because Venom actually made you more aggressive.
Exactly.
Venom made you cocky.
Right.
Not depressed.
No. Let me finish. What I'm saying is he's depressed in life. He's losing his friends. He's losing Mary Jane. He can't keep up with Spider-Man and Peter Parker. He tells the truth to old grandma, old granny, and she backs away from him as well.
Who?
Aunt May.
I was like, what?
She's older than shit in these movies.
Well, she figures it out more on her own.
Well, I did not like her in this movie. The actress herself. I have some nitpicks for this movie. But throughout the whole Spider-Man 2, I'm sitting here realizing, and I'm like, this has just got the perfect... This Venom. Should be where Venom comes in because, you know, Venom comes in and, like Ed said, it makes him aggressive, makes him cocky, makes him meaner, makes him just dark, right? This would be the perfect human for Venom to circle himself around. He's depressed. Let me come in and just shake things up. And I know you get that in 3, but that's what I felt when Peter was going through his depressed state. I was like, man, what a vulnerable person that's easy prey for Venom.
That's true. And I mean, that would have been a 720 flip on this entire character for that matter.
Would you guys think of finally meeting Dr. Octo in this movie?
That's Octavius.
I think Alfred Molina, you know, we talked about it last week, Zach, with perfect casting with J.K. Simmons. I think they hit it right on the nail again with Alfred Molina.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's, you know, in a way, he's a very charismatic character. You actually feel for him, and especially when the infusion demonstration goes horribly wrong.
Well, not only that, but you feel for him because he lost his wife.
And well, not
that's
only
what
that,
made him go, you know, kind of
lucky.
Yeah.
But he also, in some way or another, he's also kind of a quote unquote father figure to Peter. Because there are, you know, when they first meet, he's just like, oh, you're Parker, brilliant but lazy.
Yeah,
it's almost like he, because he's so, because Parker's so into the science of what he's doing, it's just like, oh, I can like kind of like,
I can mold this kid.
A pupil, kind of.
Well, it's the same thing, you know, like in Amazing Spider-Man, it's just the Lizard versus Otto, versus Dr. Connors. Dr. Connors versus Dr. Octavius. I mean, it's different characters, but the same similarities.
Right.
You know, a at first mentor slash ally versus later on an enemy and a foe.
Mm.
But, you know, still brilliant people that just let their creation get the better of them. And
so,
obsessive.
Last week, you guys heard me kind of complain about the Spidey sense. Kind of
again?
There's still some same issues in this movie with the Spidey sense. In the first one, you made the good argument, you know, he's new. This stuff is still kind of new to him. In this more recent watch of Spider-Man 2, I'm like, there it goes again. They're not, he's...
And really, when you say that, when I'm thinking about it, there's only once the main scene that, you know, when they're Spider-Man about to kiss 2? And the car goes through the window. That's really the only scene that you get the spider sense.
Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, Spider-Man 2.
Well, there's also the scene where he's getting ready to leap onto Dr. Octopus on the two skyscrapers. And he has Aunt May. And, you know, he's got the sharp needle that's about to go into Spider-Man. Spider-Man's Spidey sense didn't go off. Aunt May had to save him from that.
Right.
So there's a few more scenes in Spider-Man 2 where I'm like, why aren't the sense kicking in, and why, you know...
I think you're... Okay, so Sam Raimi actually puts a lot more detail into a lot of different things, more than what some people actually even give credit for that matter. So I think some of that is just because his attention is so diverted on several different things that he doesn't, because it's kind of like, okay, you know, how are you supposed to react when, you know, you've got one thing going on, another thing going on, you're fighting this guy, you're trying to save her as well as save the people on the ground, you know.
So Spidey sense only works when he can't multitask?
No, I'm saying that's not 100% true, or that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that literally, I think it's so diluted at some points simply because with Mary Jane, he was simply just talking to her. That's all he was doing. He was talking to her. He was having the coffee, I think. And that's it. That's all he was doing. So literally that car behind him, his senses are like, the hell?
Hold on.
And he turns out, and you know, to where like when he's fighting Otto, trying to save her, trying to go ahead and make sure that not everything gets knocked out. Then he's got this thing,
in the bank though.
Yeah.
The Spidey sense, he was sitting there just hanging out with Aunt May.
Well, it does to a small degree. Very quick.
Right, but it didn't like go off.
They didn't do the noise or anything.
No.
So it didn't go off like right.
Because, I mean, you know, as you see back when he enters into the bank, literally you see Otto Octavius in a huge trench coat and a hat going ahead and looking at the bank vault and all that, about to start his task. And then when they come and sit down, he starts his task. And then, you know, you see, I think it's, what is it, a bag of coins or money or whatever coming towards him, and he turns and kicks the seat.
I just feel like there's not enough consistency when it comes to some of Spider-Man's powers in so far 1 and 2.
But I mean, then that could even, you know, that could just be an overlook on some of their part.
That's probably also just me nitpicking. But this is the first time that I've really watched these movies getting ready for an episode. So I've really been just digging into this universe.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of, you know, him starting to slowly lose his power, Zach?
I really like that. You know, I really didn't know. I mean, when this movie came out, I'm not a comic book fan or whatever. Right. I'm not a comic book fan, so I didn't know this was actually a storyline in the comics. But I thought it was cool, like how his powers. It was just like a little thing, like him can swing through the buildings, and then like when we get to the battle scene in the bank, you know, it stops right there, and then it's full on just, he can't.
It regresses so much that he can't
do anything.
He can't even use his eyes without glasses anymore for that.
Right.
You know, so it's almost like almost every single bit of his power is just gone completely, and it's mainly due to his emotions and all that. And I mean, I'm not an Arachnid fan, so I don't know if it's something. Well, no, in all seriousness, I don't know if there's some form of Arachnid that loses its powers due to, you know, conditions or anything like that. That would be, you know.
I think one of the great scenes, like, either the he's starting to lose his sight is great, but the one that really got me to thinking, like, oh, okay, so this is kind of maybe a quote-unquote permanent thing, was when he falls out of the sky onto the building, and he kind of looks over the ledge, and he starts to have, like, kind of vertigo. It's just like, oh, no, let me just take the stairs or the elevator.
But did you see how tough that focus was that he hit with his back?
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, it didn't even, he dented the car next to it, which is an old-school car, but that focus didn't dent at all. No. You know, he focused hard. Yeah, that focus was very hard when he hit it.
This has been car talk.
When you get the change and the accident happens and, you know, Osborne's in there and Spider-Man saves his life and then the killing of Doc Ock's wife, what do you guys think of that? Just that whole scene of the transformation of Doctor to Dr. Octopus?
Tragedy. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, that's...
I mean, like, he... Sum it up. Well, and really, he's... And what's interesting is that Doc Ock is not really in it for the money, per se. That's more of Harry. Mm-hmm. And he's more into it, the science. He's really trying to help the city, and it just completely backfires on him at all costs. And
not only him, but his wife. His wife helped him a lot.
And that was the, there's a word for it. The tragedy of the experiment. I mean,
essentially, yeah.
The scene where they're trying to remove
the horror scene.
Yes.
The horror hospital scene.
How awesome is that scene?
That's like classic Sam Raimi.
Well, it's funny that you have that, because literally in my notes I have the surgery scene, Evil Dead-like.
Yeah.
It's pretty gory for, especially a Spider-Man movie for that matter.
And then you have the old trape, or the salute to the chainsaw right there from Army of Darkness.
Well, I think in that moment, that's when, like, you could make an argument that when he gets electrocuted and then the little microchip kind of dies on him, that could be when he becomes Doc Ock. But that, when he's born in the hospital and the arms go crazy, that's when he becomes like Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, definitely.
Going a little bit back, what do you guys think of the? It's just a little tiny scene, but the Peter's birthday party. You know, he's just so out of touch of reality by this point that, you know, he forgets his birthday and MJ and Harry are there and he's still falling for Mary Jane.
Yeah.
And you could tell the tension of Harry and Peter are just slowly boiling over.
Well, I mean, you got two territorial.
Well, he even says it's like I'm by the third movie, obviously, but like he's so done of trying to convince him, like, hey, I didn't kill your dad.
Right. And he does, well, I mean, okay, Harry didn't know until, what, midway through this?
Almost that, the ending.
Yeah. That, you know, it was Peter, his friend, not only Spider-Man, Peter, his friend, that actually did have the accident. But, you know, he doesn't believe or anything like that. But at the same time, you've got two territorial
males powers after the female,
You know, and I mean, both of them, you know, have heightened sense, because literally some people speculate that Harry started transforming into Green Goblin, or Hobgoblin, I guess you could say, around the when we ever see him stand up in the crowd at Mary Jane's play, because he's got a green bow tie on.
No.
It's barely tinted, but it's green nonetheless. And even with the play, for that matter, how it follows is kind of how her and Peter's relationship goes. Because a lot of different things in the play, you'll see the dialogue will follow the story quite well. You know, so I mean, there's several different little things with the play that kind of was interesting and kind of cool. And you don't catch that until you see it a few different times, for that matter.
Right.
Because there's literally, you know, she touches, her character touches on how in the beginning, forgiveness. And she's like, yes, I want to forgive Peter. But then she's like, no, I'm not going to forgive him.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if it's like her act two or act three or whichever, but with the play, she, when she's talking to her character, her co-character about, you know, being part of two different lives.
Right.
It's the same thing with Peter, you know, and that's when he starts struggling a lot with the Spider-Man character.
Yeah. I mean, and that, we'll get to the ending of that. Just the last scene of the movie is kind of chilling in some factor. But, you know, we're kind of, I know we're jumping all over the place, but It's so stupid. It's not even it's obviously play for laughs, but the rent, his landlord that's always like, hi, hi, rent, hi, what's high? Can I spend it?
Well, I like how they put them in there because, you know, Ditkovich, of course, Steve Ditko, you know, included through all three movies. But I like how they put them in there, just little bits of the landlord and his daughter, for that matter. Because they go a lot more in the third and the first, I think.
They're not in the first movie.
No, they at all? Oh, no, shit.
It's just two and three.
Damn, I thought they were in the very...
They have more of like a... They're more of a sympathetic character, characters in three than they are in two, but it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of a cool nod, but yeah, definitely.
And then, yeah, you know, then we get the infusion demonstration that goes horribly wrong. We get the hospital horror scene that we talked about. J. Jonah Jameson is awesome in this movie, as per usual, J.K. Simmons. Probably the one scene where it's just like downright hysterical. It's like, can you pay me in advance? He starts busting out laughing. It's like, are you serious? You know?
Well, I like that.
But that's like classic. That's that classic character of what Jonah Jameson's supposed to be, though.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, Johnny brought this up to me. I didn't even realize it, you know, when Doctor Strange was name dropped.
Yeah, when they used the Doctor Strange name.
I didn't even realize that at all. I don't know why I didn't, but I didn't.
Yeah, because they're listing a name. They're trying to name Doc Ock. And they're going like, you know, ah, crap. Doctor Strange is like, it's pretty good. It's been taken.
It kind of makes me wonder what they might have had in store for the rumored back in the day fourth movie they were going for.
Well, I'm also looking at the credits in one and two. Man, I didn't know that Kevin Feige literally was
the producer.
Was the producers on some of these older Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And I mean, then you've
even got, back with X-Men.
Yeah.
Because I've heard rumors of, you remember the dude outside of the play that kept Peter out because of the illusion.
Bruce Campbell. Yeah.
Yeah, he was supposed to be like a Mysterio. Possible.
Really?
Because he talked about illusion and different things like that, as well as he played several different characters throughout the entire...
Next week, we are going to fantasy book what would have, could have been Spider-Man 4.
Right.
Zach, you said it last week. You know, it was...
It was going to happen, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's funny is that, like, that little... name, that character name drop of Doctor Strange, they weren't playing the MCU at that point. It's just, you know, they're just kind of doing it for laughs and the comic book people would catch on to it. But now, where we are now, it's just kind of like, oh.
And it does take a little more effect because if you look at Peter's helmet, that is not far from where Doctor Strange's current living situation is over in New York. Because it's like 177... I forget the name of the street, but that's at 177, to where this is at 223 of the same damn street. So literally, they aren't far from each other at all. Mm-hmm. You know, so I thought that was a pretty funny little thing that Feige brought back, for that matter. You know, I did not realize he was a producer, but still.
So, you know, going on, we get a lot more, like, characters. We get, like, the, you know, MJ's getting married. I did not like MJ in this movie, and I understand that's more of the writing of the character, but I just thought that, you know, she was basically, you know, a complete ass to Peter the entire time.
See,
did you like her in this movie than the first one?
I honestly never like the character Mary Jane, but I honestly really don't like the way she was portrayed in this movie.
Kirsten... I've kind of listened to a couple things about these films, and Kirsten Dunst was done. Like, she did not want to come back for this movie. Tobey Maguire didn't really want to come back for this movie. It was originally, Ed, you'll like this, it was supposed to be Jake Gyllenhaal that they were going to replace him with.
Damn.
But, you know, they gave Tobey Maguire the money he wanted, and he came back and did it, so.
See, when I hear stuff like that, I get turned off about Tobey Maguire or, you know, people being Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, you know...
That
almost...
It's different from, like, you know, Tobey Maguire not wanting to come back. And I don't understand these actors that hit it big. They get a big blockbuster franchise, and they don't want to come back and do it. It's different from that than Tom Holland's contract is about to end, and we don't know if he's going to come back. Well, you know?
My only two scenarios would be the agent. The agent would probably be like, Toby, knock this out of the park. You got all this money. You did a big Spider-Man movie. Now, let's go get you some Oscar-worthy performance-type movies. And he did. He got that after Spider-Man.
Yeah. And right before Spider-Man 2, he was doing Seabiscuit.
Yeah. So right after that, he probably got the head of himself. He's like, I don't need to go back to that style of acting. I don't need to go back to action films. Let me go and do stuff like that. And you know, some actors and some agents are like that. You know, they're like, take the money, do the big franchise film, and then go win you some awards and never go back to it again.
Right.
But
you know, we get probably two of the big three.
What'd you think of Harry?
Well, there were moments when James Franco's, when he figures out who Spider-Man is, I think he was good in that. But when the demonstration room was like, it's my money, like, that was awful on this rewatch.
What do you think when he was a little drunk and he kept slapping Toby or Peter at the ball? And he's like, you know, call me a friend. And
you want to do this. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, classic line. It's fine. It was fine. What did you guys think? It was just the continuous of the boiling over point for these two characters. They could have fought it out right there.
I honestly, don't get me wrong, this is not a terrible movie, but I kind of disagree with the whole spill of Spider-Man 2 being the best of this trilogy. That's just me. Sitting back and watching 1 and 2 back to back, I still think 1 is the better film. To me, number 2, you just get better performances out of Tobey Maguire. Tobey Maguire is a lot better in this one than he is the first one. And I think it's because, you know, second film, you get the same, you get a new villain, but he's kind of doing the same with Mary Jane and Aunt May. Oh, I gotta go, you know, Aunt May is in trouble again. I did not like the actress or the character of Aunt May in this movie. I was like, you know, her being too old in the first one was one thing, but then here in the second one, the house being foreclosed and Peter, you know, telling her the truth and him pouring his heart out there, and I just did not like the character of Aunt May in this movie.
But I think we had to have that scene eventually where he reveals what really happens. You either do it in this one or in the third one.
And I don't know if it's because she's like 103 years old, but her acting was just so bone dry in this movie.
Well, she's only in the movie for like 15 minutes.
But
so
it's just super, super dry.
Yeah. But you know, one of the big positives I will give this movie is the action. There's a lot more action in this one than the first one. The two big back-to-back sequences, we get the bank robbery, like you said, Ed, and then the building fight. You know, where he's trying to rescue Aunt May, and then the awesome where they're just like battling going down the building.
Then you get the train scene.
Oh yeah.
The train scene is actually really, really iconic for that matter, because especially when he goes and
I'm sure they'll find
to the front of it for that matter.
Yeah, I'm sure they're gonna find a way to bring the train scene in No Way Home.
No, they. Yeah,
I'm sure they will.
Probably will.
I don't want to hear any spoilers.
No spoilers. Yeah.
So there's actually the two little kids are his half brothers, Tobey Maguire. They're his half brothers. Yeah.
Justin Toby and then Alfred McMichael.
What?
Yeah, that's their names. Alfred McMaguire. Do you guys think, and I'm trying to think of all the other Spider-Man movies real quick, do you think the train sequence is the best Spider-Man scene of all time?
I don't think the best, but I think it's one of the better ones. Definitely one of the top five, if not top three for that matter.
Yeah, because, I mean,
and that's what's so fun about these episodes coming up. We just get to touch on everything Spider-Man.
I mean, one of the other great sequences, we're going to talk about it, you know, here in a couple of weeks, but the school fight in Amazing Spider-Man between Peter and the Lizard, I thought was pretty good. And then I don't remember anything. I honestly don't remember anything from the Tom Holland Spider-Mans. I just know it's Michael Keaton and Jake Gyllenhaal. So, but yeah, I mean, the train fight is like...
Have you already revisited 3?
No. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. 3 is a... Like I said, I don't think 3 is as bad as everyone says it is, but it's got issues. It's got a lot of issues, to be honest. But yeah, we get the two big fight sequences, and then you know we get the montage of raindrops keep falling on my head, and he's basically back to Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really good like montage of just, you know,
him being him.
He's just kind of taking a step back and just saying, "Hey, it's not." He even tells MJ, "Just something. I don't have to do that anymore." And it's not even him saying he's Spider-Man, but something's changed, and I can just be me.
What do you think of the scene of the homeless person bringing the suit to Jim Jameson? And he's like, "I'll give you $100 and a bar of soap. Get out of here."
Don't tell me you have the head of an extraterrestrial in there because you're the third guy this whole week.
And then you get the scene where, you know, Toby eventually comes back and takes the suit back, and he's, you know, Spider, he's a thief. He's a menace. I need him.
Well, and like, it's so funny. Like, J.K. Simmons' role, like, acting in these films are so good because he's just like, it's all my fault. I ran Spider-Man off, and then the next thing is like, I want Spider-Man.
He wants his head again, for that matter, because literally. You get, and I mean, don't get me wrong, even in the first movie, you see that he's not going to be he's not necessarily a villain. He's more of a media mogul, for that matter, because even in the first one, when Green Goblin comes in and is wanting Spider-Man's head, for that matter, he's like, I don't know where he is. I don't know. He's like, I get the pictures in the mail from the kid, and, you know, then Spider-Man comes right up and all that. So it continues in this, for that matter, with a slightly different look or a slightly different thought. But, you know, when he's gone, he's like, well, shit. He's like, I just lost my best asset, basically. He's like, I lost my moneymaker right there. Because I'm sure, you know, his sales went from, you know, I don't know,
skyrocketed
50,000 to a couple hundred thousand, for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, copies, you know, every day. But, yeah, because literally every time someone, you know, was someone seen Spider-Man in the paper, boom, I'm sure every copy sold out. So he was just like, hell yeah, you know. But it shows the duality of what he's trying to do.
And I think one of the other things, I just thinking about it, is that, you know, we get the clock towers fight scene and then the train, which is obviously genius. But it is interesting that, except for Aunt May, our two other main characters learn the truth in this film.
Yeah.
And that sets up three. Because Harry finds out, which is a great scene.
Oh, yeah.
And MJ finds out. Really, that one was by accident. But she, you know, she knows the truth. And I think, you know, we talked about it last week, Johnny, but I think she kind of had an idea of who Spider-Man was. So.
No, yeah, she did. At least pretty damn sure on that, just because she was starting to put two and two together. But at the same time, the reveal to Harry was probably the best, in my opinion, just because, you know,
he just wasn't expecting that. Well, you would never think in a million years that would be Spider-Man.
I think he did. I think he did expect it, or think about it, but I think he was just like, nah, you know what, no, I'm going to put that out of my head. That's just, you know, nah, man. You know, because they were kind of double-crossing each other for a big portion of it all. But, you know, I've got to say, I think it was kind of funny, you know, with the scene where Doc Ock knocks him out, brings him up and all that. And right after he leaves, you know, Harry kind of comes to terms with his demons, for that matter, as well.
Yeah.
You know, finding the goblin
lair.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that's really a great cameo by William Dafoe, because you're really not expecting it. And when he shows up, he's just like, avenge me. And he can't. And one thing I will say about Franco's acting is that he really does consider Peter a brother, and he can't force himself to kill him.
Which, I mean, you know, essentially it's the, I don't really know, it's the goblin gas, if you will, affecting the mind, basically, because it makes the user, it's kind of like a venom to a point. It makes the user so much more aggressive and kind of loses ambitions of, you know, compassion, for that matter.
Well, what's interesting about that, and we'll talk about that more in three next week, but while the gas made Norman crazy, I really don't think it just heightened Harry's like physical
emotions and physical attributes as well, because I think it just made him more angry, for that matter, than anything.
Well, I just don't think
like a psychopath, like
he's not a psychopath. He knows obviously what he's trying to do. So
yeah, because I think going back to, you know, the physical attributes, for that matter, because in the first one you see how different it is for you know, Norman McDonald, or, wow, what the Norman McDonald. Fuck?
Norman Osborn.
Wow. Norman Osborn and Peter Parker, for that matter. Norman Osborn and Peter Parker, you know, taking a pumpkin bomb, for that matter, compared to ordinary people. You know, because the ordinary people in the first movie fucking disapparated, basically. They, right. They just
disintegrate.
You know, literally were just gone.
They got Thanos'd.
And, yeah, no shit on that. The idea gone from that.
Yeah.
To where, you know, they were hurt by it, but not that much. It was more just like a small little grenade for them that right. they were kind of undercover for. To where in the same thing, you know, you see Harry get affected by it. To a small degree like that, because he gets more physically scarred by it rather than injured,
and that,
for
yeah.
that matter.
And that's in Spider-Man 3, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you can see the lasting effects and see that, you know, it definitely does hits on different people, for that matter. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, the rest of the movie after the train fight, you know, we get, obviously, the reveal of Harry and what he becomes later in the film. That scene where he is kind of sitting there with a knife and he discovers the Goblin's lair, in today's world, that would have been a post-credit scene.
Yeah.
They would have saved that, and that would have been like the setup for 3.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but, I mean, the rest of the movie is basically a cakewalk, because you get kind of like the mini pure fight. MJ finds out the truth. Quote-unquote, Dr. Octopus dies while bringing the experiment down. And then, you know, MJ, quote-unquote, you know, tries to get married, but, you know, she comes back to Peter.
I like how you say, quote-unquote, dies.
Because
you see him float down at the bottom of the river.
Yeah.
And then you see the lights from the arms turn off as well.
But then in 3, you see Dr. Octavius still at large.
Yeah, in the background.
In the paper, yeah, in mm-hmm. the back, yeah.
So, but he could have been, if he wasn't down at the end of the river, he could have been in a boat down by the river.
This guy.
No.
Go check out our Ghostbusters episode.
Yeah, last Monday, guys, it was a fun episode. We just got done talking about Ghostbusters and our top 5 SNL cast members. So go check that out last Monday, just a few days ago on our last episode. Episode 167.
Man.
But yeah, you know, and I was talking, you know, Ed, you brought it up a little bit earlier, but the last scene of the film is, you know, they kind of confess their love, and she says, go get him, Tiger, and he goes out being Spider-Man. And I really, really like just the last scene of the film. She's kind of, Mary Jane's just kind of leaning against the window watching him go off, and it's just kind of like,
this is my life now.
It's almost like an uncertain future.
Oh, no, 100%.
I don't think she's really grappled with the idea of what she's committed to.
Well, I mean, you know, she's got... Okay, so if you compare Jameson's son to Parker,
yeah.
for that matter, you know, you've got two extraordinary guys, for that matter. You've got an astronaut versus a superhero, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, one that is very... Both are very well known, but one is publicly well known to the other one is... secretively well known, well, publicly, but not identity wise well known.
Yeah.
And then you got one that leads kind of a not richy rich, but a richer lifestyle.
Yeah.
To the other one who lives a very poverty-ish lifestyle, for that matter. Because I mean, you know, I'm sure that apartment's costing them out the ass.
It's almost kind of coming down to the idea of, do you want someone that's safe, that you know you're going to trust and they'll always be there? Or do you want someone that, yeah, you've known them since childhood, but you really don't know what the other identity is?
It's sort of a...
Well, you do by that point, but...
Yeah, know. But I mean, even then, it's an unstable thing to where, yeah, he can probably save you from anything, but...
At some point, you know, like Goblin says in the first one, a hero will die. They will die in the act. They will, you know, quote-unquote, they won't come home.
Yeah.
So
either that or you'll live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Which we do in Spider-Man, which is a great lead into Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
So I like bringing up the idea, Zach, that if, you know, Spider-Man 2 came out today, your post-credit scene would be James Franco
finding out about his dad.
Becoming the Hobgoblin.
What do you think would be the one for Spider-Man 1?
Maybe the funeral?
No.
No.
Probably something to do with Dr. Octavius, kind of like a name drop or something to that effect. Probably, you know,
starting the experiment the first time.
Starting the experiment or something to the effect of, you know,
or
the Daily Bugle finding out, like, hey, there's a.
Or I was going to say maybe of Peter, you know, sitting there thinking, man, I got to do this paper. Who should I do the paper on?
Dr. Octavius. Yeah, that would have been good.
Well, I mean, there you know. Go. Well, I mean, two ends with the same scene that three opens with, for that matter.
What do you mean?
They literally use the same exact scene in the ending of two for the opening of three, where he's swinging like, in the city. The exact same thing.
Oh, it's just like a lead. Like it's almost like a you take out Spider-Man 2, you put in Spider-Man 3. It just like connects.
Pretty much, yeah. Literally, it's almost breath for breath.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, let's talk about it just for a couple minutes. You know, a lot of people say this is a quote unquote one of the best superhero films of all time. In retrospect, I really, really like this film, but, like, after all the stuff that we've had now, I mean, it doesn't really hold a candle. I mean, what do you guys think?
I wouldn't say it doesn't hold a candle to it, but, I mean...
I just think it's, like I said in the outset, I think it just has a lot more grander scale than what the first film had.
Yeah, it definitely does on that, because now they're playing with... Now they don't do the origin story, they don't spend time with Ben, they don't spend time doing, you know, him finding his outfit and finding out how to do his powers and shit like that. They find out, you know, with what to do, for that matter, and what the small little intricacies of him dealing with everyday life, as well as nightlife, as well as personal life, as well as, you know, all these other lives...
We don't do emails on this show, but I'm going to read a comment on one of the Facebook posts from the Cinema Movie Podcast Facebook page and see what you guys think about this. Dusty comments and says, as time goes, I like the Tobey Maguire films a lot less and less. My favorite are still the Andrew Garfield films. I would have loved to see where they would have taken the series with him. I really like the Tom Holland films, but they seem like extensions of the Avengers Iron Man movies and not a solo Spider-Man film. So then I proceeded and I asked Dusty, I said, what would you give each film, or at least the 2002 film? And these are his star ratings. Spider-Man a 6, Spider-Man 2 a 7, Spider-Man 3 a 4, The Amazing Spider-Man an 8, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 a 9, Homecoming an 8, and Far From Home an 8. He says, as time goes by, Spider-Man just gets campier and campier as the superhero film evolves and gets much better.
You know what the other thing is? It's like, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans are just a product of that time. You know, it was quote-unquote post 9/11, and we were just kind of, as a nation, we were dealing with some things. And when Spider-Man came out, it was almost kind of like we need a hero in our lives to kind of get through the dark times. And then Spider-Man 2 is kind of like...
Go ahead.
No, it's just Spider-Man 2 is just kind of like the metaphor of, all right, we're kind of leaning back and we're not wanting to accept what the world is like out there, you know? And then Spider-Man 3, I don't know what the hell they're trying to do with that, but...
I feel almost like the opposite of Dusty. Like, to me, I like the comic book campiness of Spider-Man 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And I honestly, we're going to talk about it on Thanksgiving, but I honestly felt that I enjoyed this recent watch of Spider-Man 3 a little bit more than I should have.
Yeah.
And we're going to, you know, as a whole, the Tobey Maguire trilogy ends on Thanksgiving and we'll wrap it up and talk about it. But to me, you know, I gave a little bit of flack at the beginning of the episode to Spider-Man 2. And I don't think it's better than one, but I think they're neck and neck.
Personally, like, this is... I like the technology in 3, the technology in Tom Holland's Spider-Man. I like the visual effects in The Amazing Spider-Man, for that matter, and then I like the character of Spider-Man in Spider-Man, the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not saying I don't like Garfield. Garfield, I think, pulled off different things than Tobey Maguire did, where Tom Holland's pulling different things off than either one of them did. Toby got to do different things than either one of Tom or Andrew got to do. So, I mean, I think each one has their different
interpretations of it.
And, yeah, interpretations of it as well. But greatness in each one of them for that matter. And, I mean, you know, I don't think necessarily any of them's perfect. But I do more like the Tobey Maguire because of his the organicness of it. Mm-hmm. And literally the powers as well as more just like, you know, because, okay, with the Amazing Spider-Man, he was more of like a love-crossed teen that is trying to deal with school. And, I mean, this is more kind of but more kind of in the Peter Parker comic book trueness for that matter, because he was in school through a lot of it. I think he was a junior and senior through when he, you know, got bit and all that stuff. So, you know, there is that.
Well, and they've done different quote unquote, like I said, interpretations where Toby's Spider-Man is like, you get the high school nerd, but you also get kind of like a young adult trying to figure out the world. Andrew Garfield's kind of stuck in the high school phase, and then Tom Holland, depending on what this next movie does, he's still in the high school phase as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think we come on his freshman year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it comes in on his freshman year, and so you've got 4 years total that you can work with throughout his, you know, teenhood, whatever. But, you know, then you get reverted 5 years from, you know, Endgame and all that good junk. Or, well, Infinity Wars and Endgame. But, I mean,
but it just feels so weird. You know, the three Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans hit on all cylinders. It's hard to believe that in just a few weeks, we're already getting our third MCU Spider-Man. Literally, this is the third full Spider-Man out of the MCU. I mean, and flew by.
Well, and, you know, if you really think about it in the grand scheme of things, we've had two trilogies of Spider-Man and then two other films.
Yeah.
And it's just like, Spider-Man is
one of the more popular characters overall, for that matter.
Well, think about this. And, you know,
That's almost 10 full Spider-Man movies in 10 years?
Well, and that's
in
what,
20 years?
And that's what I was going to say. And
that's a lot.
And Batman is kind of doing the same thing. But think about this, because we get Tobey Maguire's trilogy. It ends in 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. About 5 years, we get Garfield. And then 2014. So three years after Amazing Spider-Man, we get Tom Holland. That's a really, quote-unquote, in 20 years, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, 20 years, we've had almost eight films of Spider-Man. Not including any of the Avengers and any of that stuff. Just like eight films of Spider-Man in that 20-year time frame. That's, you know, that's a lot. And that partly is because one of them is just a reboot. Theoretically, the Garfield ones.
Well, you can almost say the same thing for Tom Holland as well.
I agree just a little bit, because Tom Holland, we're just bringing him back. We're just trying to bring Spider-Man into the MCU. That's what that was about. Homecoming, literally. So
it'll be a fun conversation. Do you guys have any favorite scenes you want to knock off your chest here? I'm going to rapid fire through mine real quick. Obviously, it's going to be the train scene, him stopping, you know, and the citizens carrying him over their heads, giving the mask. The scene where Doc Ock actually becomes Dr. Octopus in the apartments or whatever that little basement-like thing is. And then my ultimate favorite scene is going to be where James Franco reveals Spider-Man and just backs away. And, you know, Toby's like, we got bigger fish to fry, me and you can let's hold off till the trilogy.
Yeah. A couple of mine would be obviously the train fight. I think that's going to be on all of our list. The building fight where they're just kind of like going at it and they're just like falling down the building. After the bank robbery. You know, it's a little scene, but the rent, when he's coming up the staircase, it's like, oh, God, this guy again. That, and then he just kind of sits in his apartment. He's just kind of like, you can just tell he's exhausted, and he doesn't really know how to fix it. And then just the scene, just that scene, just the reaction of MJ when she kind of officially figures out that Peter is Spider-Man. It's just kind of like, yeah, I guessed right, but, like, I'm still kind of in shock about it, so... What about you, Ed?
Train scene, obviously, for that matter. Then I'd have to go with the Doc Ock fight at the end of it. Personally, I liked that quite a bit. I just thought that was kind of cool. As well as, what is it? The just him swinging out at the end of it. I thought it was pretty cool to end it with. And it was just kind of a, you get to leave the theater at that time on a high kind of thing, you know? Yeah.
Star ratings, guys. If you guys want to email in your star rating for Spider-Man 2, go ahead and send us in some emails at cinemen921@gmail.com. And we will read the emails next week when we talk Prisoners Monday night. And then play along and send in your top five Thanksgiving items for Monday's top five. We did it over the summer for top five barbecue items, so let's do it for Thanksgiving. Send in your top five Thanksgiving items. What are the five items you have to have a good Thanksgiving dinner?
So, I mean, okay, what are we, how is that being? Like, is that food? Is that
food, drinks,
anything? You were here for that episode, Eduardo. Food, drinks, anything. If you have to have a Bud Light on Thanksgiving, if it's not Thanksgiving dinner without a Bud Light, name a Bud Light.
There it is.
If it's not, if you got to have cranberry sauce, put cranberry sauce. It's whatever you to have a great Thanksgiving dinner, send it in. Let us know. Email the show at cinnamon921@gmail.com, and we will read your email Monday, this Monday. Star rating, guys. Zach, before we get out of here, what is your star rating of Spider-Man 2?
I mean, for me, it still holds up. It really does hold up still to this day, and I think it was a great experience. Time in the theater. And on this rewatch, I still had the same feelings that I had when I saw it. So, I mean, it might be cliche, but 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2 for me is going to be almost at the same level as Spider-Man 1. I gave Spider-Man last week an 8. I don't think it gets any better than the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, so I'm going to give Spider-Man 2 an 8 as well. I think they're just really neck and neck. I don't see one film being more superior than the other at this point. Both great films, both great watches, and they're both fun. You laugh, you cry, you kind of get upset. Some great films.
If Ben Foster was in Spider-Man 1, it would have been 10 out of 10.
Oh, I would have knocked it out of the park. But Ed, what about you? Send us off. What does Spider-Man 2 get from you?
I've always loved this film. So literally, I even had, like I said, some merch back when I was a kid, for that matter. I honestly think it's a damn good film. I guess I'm going to be a little bit more harsh than I think 7 out of 10. I thought I was.
Oh, damn.
But well, yeah.
What would you give Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, 9. I really liked the upcoming up of that. I thought Willem Dafoe really, really brought out the best in Tobey Maguire for the first one, as well as the characters. So, yeah. But 7 for Spider-Man. Now I kind of feel like a dick, but hey.
The next week, guys, is going to be a fun conversation.
It's going to be fun. But, you know, I think it's not going to be as bad as we probably think it's going to be. You know, food, family, football, and then Spider-Man 3 on Thanksgiving. What better way to end or start your Thanksgiving tradition other than with, you know, Spider-Man 3. I think it's going to be a fun watch, and I think it's going to be a fun conversation. So you guys check us out next Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, November 25th, as we talk Spider-Man 3. The Sam Raimi trilogy comes to an end before we talk The Amazing Spider-Man, December the 2nd. Any final thoughts or final nails in that coffin of Spider-Man 2 before we move on to Prisoners, Zach?
I mean, if you're a Spider-Man fan, I think, like you said about Ghostbusters, Ed, I think it is required viewing if you are a Spider-Man fan.
At least one time.
Exactly. And then going on to Prisoners, I'm going to rewatch it tonight, and I'm really looking forward to the rewatch.
Basically, I agree. If you haven't seen this one, I don't know where you've been. If you're a huge fan of Spider-Man, I really don't know where the hell you've been. But at least go ahead and check out this one. It's supposed to be one of the best ones. So, yeah, definitely go ahead and give it its due. Give it a watch. As far as anything else, Zed saying I'll see you on the silver screen.
Ed, you excited for Prisoners?
Si, Senor. I think it's going to be awesome just to get a first-time view of this. So, yeah.
All right, guys. I think that's going to do it. Next week, Monday, November the 22nd, we talk Prisoners. Check it out. You can stream it on Hulu. Send us in your thoughts at cinnamon921@gmail.com. Prisoners Monday, right here on the Cinnamon Movie Podcast. So motivated, I am certain.